This is GamesAtWork.biz with Michael Martin and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 252. I want a new truck. Hello, this is Michael Martin, one of the two fabulous Michaels co-hosting the GamesAtWork.biz podcast, and I'm delighted to be here today. And I don't know, Michael, are you delighted to be here today too?
All day, baby, all day.
So you have two Michaels that are too delighted, and as we talked about last week, we're too legit to quit. So, all kinds of great electric stories and vehicular stories that we have to touch on right away. And we would be remiss if we didn't talk about the new electric Cybertruck from Tesla.
Yes.
Boy, lots of noise across the Twitterverse on this one. Unfortunately, so much of it aiming at the demo that didn't work quite as exactly as expected with the unbreakable glass. But the truck itself is pretty futuristic, pretty angular, and pretty cool.
Yeah, the part that I liked about this article was actually the test drive that they did, and that was really cool. Just seeing it in use, and you know, like all Tesla's vehicles, the acceleration, right? That's pretty impressive. The thing that's interesting to me is the vehicle shape, and I wanted to get your read on that, because to me this looks like something out of Terminator.
It kind of does. It looks to me like it was designed to avoid radar detection.
Well, except for that big flat surface on the front.
Yeah, well, there's that, but you know, but all those, you know, angles and, you know, the wheel wells being the kind of thing and stuff.
I'm sorry,
that.
What was that again? Could you repeat that?
Yeah, that's the visual for those of you who are listening in today.
Well, that and the other thing that was really bizarre is in the interior, the dash surface. I mean, the people doing the test drive are talking about, is it marble? And it's like, no, it's a composite of paper. But it looks like a very unsafe surface. If you had a wreck in this thing and you hit that surface, because it's so angular and shaped like a slab of marble, it seems like that would be not very safe.
Yeah, I thought that as well. It just I don't know. I was wondering. There's got to be airbags in there somewhere, so maybe that paper, you know, splits apart in an invisible seam and allows you to rest comfortably on an inflatable bag to avoid getting bashed.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I see no airbag.
No. It's pre-production model, right?
Yep.
Pre-production model.
And so I did, you know, I did go to the site to check out the pricing, and the entry-level price is extremely reasonable for a all-electric pickup truck. The surprise is the tri-motor version that starts at $69,000.
Whoa!
Yeah. That was definitely a whoa moment.
That's a pretty whoa moment. You know, one of the things I was thinking is for those that have like super range anxiety, couldn't you imagine that there would be like an aftermarket Tesla Powerwall that you would slide in the
just
back
put in
the
bed of the truck?
And just like, oh, you want extra range? Let's just slide that in the back of the truck, and now you've got more range.
Yeah,
you know, wouldn't that be cool?
I think that would be interesting. it would kind of defeat the purpose of having a truck. But it is a four-seater or a five-seater truck, right? I mean, there's actually, you know, two sets of doors, so it's kind of the extended king cab. What I couldn't tell, and they do show a picture on one of the links that I had found of, you know, like an off-road four-wheel vehicle, four-wheeler parked up in the bed. But the bed looks like a short bed truck, right? It's like a long extended cab with a short bed, which...
Oh, wait. It's called the Vault.
Yes. Yes, it's called the Vault. It is the bed of the truck where you put crap, right? That's why you have a truck. A truck is designed to go and be used for work, and you put crap in it. Anyway, so when I looked at it, I was a bit surprised at how small the bed looked. So, what was your perspective on that?
I don't know. It was interesting across the board. The steering wheel was a little bit, you know, futuristic and not, you know, round. You know, the angles were interesting. You kind of got my sense of range anxiety people. Just add some extra batteries.
Yeah,
could be fun. And I didn't actually look at the price point until just now. And, you know, it's interesting, right?
Yeah.
To have something like this that is in that range.
I mean, the Tesla 3, I mean, it's an expensive vehicle, but it's still within normal, quote, range of a four-door sedan. Of an upper end, not a high end, but kind of upper middle end four door sedan. I mean, it's cheaper than a BMW or a Mercedes, but in the range of a high end Ford or Chrysler. So again, I'm really surprised on the pricing. I think they're really, really going after the market to make a big smash here. So I was surprised.
I do wonder from a design perspective, though. I mean, it is futuristic in a lot of ways, and I am not a truck owner, so I can't speak from personal experience. But I can imagine that there are a number of people who are current truck owners who might be looking to replace their truck with perhaps an electric truck, and what would be, you know, what they want, and how would they want to have and see and be seen in one. And this is a major departure from a design language that's been pretty common on such vehicles since the 1930s.
Yeah, well, as a former truck owner, I used to drive Ford. It was a nice vehicle. It was the little small bed Ford. The small Ranger, but when I look at this would be, it's kind of a mix between the industrial look of Terminator / a military vehicle, and a sports car. And so if I'm someone who's getting a truck for regular truck work, the look doesn't look right. The other thing is it's a full body truck. So it's kind of like an El Camino, if you remember those. Mm-hmm. So the truck bed is not an independent piece of metal from the rest of the vehicle. So again, I think that's a trade-off. That's a problem for a truck owner. It's just, it's interesting, but wrong.
The camping aspect is kind of neat. I'm just flipping through the pictures here too about, you know, the pop-up tent on top of it. It's I dare I say almost a little Aztec-esque perhaps. Maybe, I don't know. So let's switch gears from one electric vehicle to another. I saw this as well, and all of these other companies are racing to create their own electric vehicles, and there's a new one coming out from the folks in Sindelfingen. Next year, early, right?
Yep.
The EQC 4MATIC from Mercedes.
Yes.
This is a little more expensive.
Well, it's under the tri-motor Tesla model about $2,000.
Yes.
Now, it does go significantly higher, too, because I looked at this one, too. This is their SUV. This is Mercedes kind of SUV, all electric, first all electric. Again, very, very cool looking. Very traditional Mercedes styling, though. It's not going to I mean, if you're not a Mercedes fan, it's not going to knock your socks off. And if you are, you're not going to be, you know, taken aback by, oh, my God, what weirdness have they done? I mean, it looks like a Mercedes.
Right. It does. And a range of about 200 miles is what we're saying here, too.
Yeah. That's the thing. I was at pitch night for a local startup incubator this week. It's NC Riot, standing for the North Carolina Raleigh Internet of Things pitch night.
Mm-hmm.
They have been going. This is their third pitch night. I've been, I think, to all of them now, and they've been around as an organization since 2014. They're kind of a neat incubator in the sense that they're about driving growth in the area, and they don't charge the companies who are in their incubator anything. So it's not like they get a piece of the action. They don't take equity in the companies or anything. They just provide them the environment, the infrastructure, the mentors, et cetera, to drive and grow Internet of Things businesses. Anyway, one of the companies that was there on pitch night was all about EV batteries and setting up charging stations. And, you know, the average EV vehicle comes with a trickle charger. And the guy who started this company, when he got his first EV, it was the Nissan Leaf, the very first one.
Oh, yes.
And the trickle charger, if you plugged it in at 110, would give you about 30 miles overnight.
Overnight.
Overnight. So that's range anxiety at that point, because if you're in a large city,
oh, yeah.
you may not even get to work, or you may not get home after work.
Right, exactly.
But now, I know the Tesla is at around 300 to 312, and you can pay Tesla extra to get the 220 adapter, so you can plug it in your home garage, assuming you have a 220 outlet, and for like,
right,
I think it was like $750 plus $500 in installation, you can actually get a Tesla charging station in your garage. And so what this company does is they've actually built their own charging stations, and they're licensing it out to other companies for $500. For fast charging capabilities, mainly for the reason that the guy, when he first got it, had range anxiety, and he's trying to build out an infrastructure across the U.S., and most of his companies that he sells to are outside of the U.S. to build charging stations, make them cheap, easy, and accessible. So it will be very interesting to see where we get with this, and how do we get to the point where the infrastructure is in place for what's happening right now. Right now, there are, I think he said, either 18 or 20 vehicles that are all electric that you can buy today. And by 2023, there should be 80 vehicles.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so and the mass market is turning EV, and it will over the next 5 years, and you need the charging capacity to be there.
So is this particular startup's idea that they will sell to private individuals a charging station that will be installed in their garage and that will be potentially shared? Like, you know, you might show up in my garage to charge your vehicle?
No.
Or is it?
No.
Okay.
It's more purely just a charging. Okay. He started by building a charging station for himself, and then the people who helped him, he built some more. He's been cash positive for 5 years as a startup.
That's awesome.
Yeah. All self-funded, just kind of building it up himself. And now he's looking at expanding out to do reseller with enterprises and other companies who would like to white label his tech.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, it's really cool. And then it kind of wraps up to the last two stories, which is the vehicles are cool, getting the infrastructure in place so that they can be massively expanded across the market is a work right. in progress, but I think that's going to start accelerating.
Yeah, and the opportunity to use parking locations that exist today to install charging facilities and do that at scale could be really good for helping folks mitigate their range anxiety.
Exactly.
Flip side, though, is that with a 200 or 300 mile range, a 300 mile range is actually really, really good. And if you're able to charge back to full capacity overnight somewhere, like your home or at a hotel or whatever, that's, you know, that's pretty decent capability right there for what you need.
Here's my comparison point there, right? My vehicle, if I'm doing pure city driving, on a full mm-hmm. tank of gas, gets about 320 to 340 miles. So 300 on a charge, that's equivalent for all practical purposes.
Yeah,
I can charge my car at a gas station in about 5 to 10 minutes, and I can drive from here to New York State with no problem.
Yes, but how often do you make that trip?
A few years back, I did it like 6 or 7 times within a year.
That was a few years back. And so for those purposes, you might elect to rent a car or you might elect other modes of transportation. But if you're able to get, you know, a week's worth of travel off of 325 miles in your gas tank, and you're able to effectively top that up to have a full 325 miles every night, you're probably in decent shape.
Yeah. The problem is when you do have the long trip and you are taking your existing vehicle, we have to get to faster charging. And it was interesting about that. A couple of weeks ago, I saw an article, and I think it was an MIT review. It might have been Stanford, about a group of scientists who have created a faster charging capability.
We had a link on that recently, didn't we?
Did we talk about it on the show where they basically are putting thin layers of metal, almost like tinfoil between the layers of the battery, and they could charge to 80% in like 15 minutes?
Yeah, I think we may have had that.
Okay, so we did talk. You add these two things together, and now we have a way from a technology perspective to get rid of range anxiety.
Right. So the real interesting tipping point to me is when range anxiety like that becomes less of a concern.
Yep.
All of a sudden, you've got an enormous population of internal combustion engine vehicles whose value
plummets,
drop like a rock. Absolutely.
Which is good because I need spare parts.
So speaking of things that don't drop like a rock or sink like a rock.
Balloons.
Which would be a duck because they're made out of wood. Anyway,
gravy.
We have an example.
Very small stones.
We have an example from Vivek Wadhwa. I just happened to see his tweet, a Mashable article, or not article, just a little video, a little teensy video, about a minute, showing Boeing that in the span of watch this at home, kids, 1 year, so that's pretty darn fast, created its first test flight of a self-flying car.
Yes.
This one only has a range of 50 miles, but it brings air taxi kind of travel to the fore, and if you don't want to ride a bird or a lime or some other scooter kind of thing to get where you need to go, this could be pretty effective.
Yeah, this is cool. And we've seen a couple of different companies working on this, but Boeing getting into it in a big way now is pretty impressive. And, you know, 50 miles as the crow flies is a significantly further distance many times than 50 miles as my car can drive, right?
Yep.
So very cool.
Yep. You know, this, though, begs a few other things, which says, okay, now you need landing places.
Noise ordinance.
Noises. I mean, there's a whole series of things that need to be put into place. But if you're going to do this, you almost need like it'll be a mini airport. It'll be like a mini, you know, air bus stop or air taxi.
Well, do you really need that? I mean, if it can land in a parking space.
If it's the same size as a vehicle as a car, yes, you could do that, and you say I'm going to land in any particular parking space. But just taking North Carolina into account as an example, we still have an awful lot of overhead power lines. We've got city locations that might be trickier to get to. So the infrastructure that exists today to make this really practical in city locations or places and spaces that have challenges for air powered vehicles, to wit, you know, traffic lights and wired power grids that that have telephone poles and things like that everywhere. There's some fun things that have to be thought through. And maybe, you know, one of the angles of this is that the vehicle has to fly down to essentially street level and act like a car for the very tail end of the journey and then land fully in a parking spot. So it's almost like a hovercraft for the last part of the journey, but could be a flying vehicle for a good chunk of it. I don't know. Fun thing to think about, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to this longer term. The things, like I kind of already hinted at, things that I worry about are noise and, as you say, parking. But when we get to that, then we've got to I think we have to get to true self-flying, just like self-driving, because I don't think I want people touching the controls of these flying hovercrafts for people, because I've watched people drive. And some people are presume that they're allowed to jump in front of people. Let's put it that way. I was going to use a bad word, but we're a family show.
Family show. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And when you consider that under today's rules and regulations, at least in the United States, but certainly, you know, similar in many, many other countries, to earn a pilot's license is a non-trivial event.
Yes.
So. If the only people who would have access to such vehicles would be people with pilot's licenses, boy, that would severely restrict their usability, wouldn't it?
Yes, their wing print. I was going to say footprint, yeah, but you know.
Their wing print. Their landing zone print,
yes.
Something like
so,
that.
So speaking of, no, I couldn't do that. I was going to try and think of a sneaky little landing comment, but you found another article.
I did find another article. That you're right. You're absolutely right. So longtime listeners of the show know that we are into things like robots and robotics, and that we love vehicles. And we're also extremely into artificial intelligence and gosh, games, too, come to think of it.
Imagine that.
And there's an article that I read that I was really eager to chat with you about, Michael, because I felt like
are we gonna have
this
to talk?
Would make for interesting conversations. We're not having that talk. I think you know enough already. There's this Vox article that is focused on a chatbot that's being used by Planned Parenthood. And this particular bot, you know, every time you have a chatbot, you give it a name. This one is called Roo, as in, you know, like small kangaroo.
Oh,
Roo,
I thought you were R-O-O. Thinking about Reynolds.
Well, I was thinking about Roo Reynolds, too, because he, you know, he's chatty sometimes as well and shares some cool articles and yep. things like that with us and others. But this particular Roo is the Planned Parenthood chatbot to help teenagers get information about sex ed. And that's always a dicey topic, to say the least, when teenagers are searching and looking for information. A little different now than it was, Michael, when you and I were growing up. The library was certainly my friend, I'll tell you that. And I, you know, used a lot of library resources and books and so on to sort out a bunch of things. But now with the internet, now with concerns around privacy, concerns about what you put into a search engine and what sort of ads it might serve you up later, concerns about just talking to people about very embarrassing subjects. To me, this felt like one of the great use cases for a chatbot and yes. for a way for young people to be able to interact with something that they know is an AI. It's not a person, and to have confidence that they're having a private, secure conversation that's going to allow them to learn some things that they might need to know. So I read through this article. I actually tried out the chatbot just a little bit.
Cool.
And there were a couple of things that I attempted to do with the chatbot, you know, like asking it questions such as, is this really private?
Are you sure?
And that hadn't been part of the intents that had gone into this particular chatbot just yet, because it was like, I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I don't know what you mean by privacy. So tell me about your secrets.
What I like about it, there's several things that I really like about it. So the first aspect is that Rue has emoticon kind of a structure to it. It's sort of this weird little parallelogram that can express some emotions and can show some reaction to you. Actually, it gets a little sleepy and tired if you don't interact with it for a while, and kind of reminds you that it's still there. It's not nearly as annoying as our Clippy example was from Once Upon a Time. Insert your favorite joke here. Hey, teenager, it looks like you're trying to.
Don't look.
maybe not. But it's good. It's good to provide information in a way that can be respectful of privacy and provide a safe and trusted environment. And to me, this is one superb example of where a chatbot is absolutely the right thing to do.
Agree. I haven't had a chance to really crawl through the article or even play with the chatbot yet, but I like the concept. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think from a teenager perspective, trying to learn all this stuff, it's probably better than general internet searches or asking your friends, because they just did the general internet searches, and you know, you don't want them to come up with everybody's doing this. I hear people say, right, you actually want it based off of, you know, facts and science and maybe some information about what's really going on. Very cool.
Yep, exactly. So I encourage those of you who are working in the AI field, give this a look at. And there's a nice interview that goes on about this as well. So it's a useful thing for many people. Now, staying on the theme of AI, you have an example here of a company that we've been following, talking to, engaging with now for quite a while, Real Illusion, on something called Headshot. So
yeah, this is awesome. So John and the team over at Real Illusion just announced this at SIGGRAPH Asia. This is their new capability called Headshot. They've had various character creator capabilities that allowed you to do things, to take a picture and then try to mold it onto a shape, a face primitive, and then kind of tweak it and make it look kind of like you. And gosh, it was 2008, so 11 years ago we were doing some stuff with them in the EBO that I was in, so in the startup that I was in. And I've still got footage of things that I did with my own face and people that I knew, because we used it in certain materials, etc. And John and James, the guys have just been great over the years with what they've doing. What they are now doing, which is so impressive in Headshot, is taking a standard picture and using AI, understanding the depth map that's could be generated based off of shadows and other information in a regular two-dimensional picture, so that the first pass at building the three-dimensional headshot is much, much, much more lifelike, much more accurate to the actual person. Doesn't require you to do, you know, multiple shots and mapping and everything to try to figure out the facial structure. And then you get the whole benefit of the rest of the Real Illusion suite of, you know, camera angles, puppeting the face, doing voice match and having it speak. So this is very impressive. And, you know, it's been a while since I've had the opportunity to play with their tools. They still don't have a Mac version, and I'm no longer really on Windows for anything except for a couple of games. So my Windows machine is no longer at the level where I would feel comfortable running their tools on it. But I'm really impressed, and this looks really exciting for them. And I can't wait to see what comes out of this with some of the cool machinima videos and other videos that people create using their tools.
Yeah, just looking at the high res textures on hair and pores and wrinkles and everything is just incredibly amazing.
Yeah, and much of that is really just from the original picture, right? Before, you would have to build a lot of that yourself. Now it's actually interpreting the picture and trying to figure it out.
That's just super.
Well, I think we're at time.
Yes.
And so I guess there's some other cool stuff we'll talk about next time. And we hope everybody enjoyed the show, and we'll have a great week off next week. It's a holiday in the U.S., so I doubt we'll be recording next week. But we will be back in the beginning of December with the next edition of GamesAtWork.biz.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at GamesAtWork_biz or at our website at GamesAtWork.biz.